We got a real simple plan. One me and one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
You're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day Podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, here's Reese Davis.
Georgia might have a problem. And what will the game look like for Alabama if Bryce Young can't play against Texas A&M? And finally, after wandering in the wilderness for generations, being a non-factor, finally a program that has come to the light and into the present as a power. No, I'm not talking about Kansas. I'm talking about David Pollack's internet. This is the College Game Day Podcast for Wednesday, October 5th. Reese Davis, Pete Thamel here, and the great David Pollack has joined us wearing a baseball hoodie, which makes me proud. And then in addition to that, for the first time in all the years that I've communicated with David via internet, I can actually see him, and he doesn't look like, for people of a certain age, that old cartoon character, Max Headroom, where he's going, yeah. Pollack, what's it like to have internet that you don't hear, beep, 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 before it starts? Like, dial, what's that like?
It's pretty fun. It's pretty phenomenal. It's amazing. Like, I'll share the first thing me and my wife did. We're like, watch this. When you click on the link, it comes up. Like, this is awesome. How cool is this? So, it's the simple things in life. But no, I have not started, Reese. I've not started video gaming yet. I'm saving that until after the season because Lord knows I'll be up till 2 or 3 a.m. like this, glued to a screen. So I'm going to keep gluing myself to tape for the time being. But it's a lot of fun. The kids appreciate it too.
Pete, you can't imagine. I mean, maybe you can. You've done a few of these. You can't imagine what this has been like for the last few years. And I don't know how he watches all the tape that he does. I mean, it probably has to come through almost like one of those, you know, those cartoon things when you draw different cartoons in the corner of a stack of paper and then you flip the paper to make it look like it's moving. That has to be how he was watching tape before.
Knowing David only a short period of time, he sort of like craves this like caveman simplicity ethos. And I'm wondering if this really conflicts with that, David, like this, like takes you a little bit out of your like simple human mode.
I would answer that, but I don't know what you're talking about with caveman ethos and all that crap. So if you want to talk about football,
you can Google it now football. And get an answer very quickly.
Come on, David. No, you're not fooling me. Tell the man, answer the man's question. You know what it means.
No, it's definitely, I mean, I think you definitely take pride. I definitely take pride in having cows as neighbors. Like I thoroughly enjoy that. And I take, you know, pride in being a barbarian in a three technique as noted on game day every week that Reese and them just, I'm not a fancy guy. You know, I'm just more of a put my hand in the dirt kind of a guy. I'm not going to wear dress shoes much to Reese Davis's chagrin. But it is what it is, baby.
You know,
didn't you tell me a famous story about you grabbing a steak with your hand at a restaurant?
Oh, this is an amazing story. Which, yeah. By the way, because Pollack teases me about being, you know, I don't know, more refined. What Pollack did
highfalutin would be a good word.
Highfalutin, maybe. But what Pollack did with the steak, completely on board with. Tell them the story, Dave. What you did with the steak?
I was at a restaurant, a really nice restaurant, in L.A. And we were with a bunch of our colleagues, and a steak was sent to the table, and it was not the liking of one of our colleagues, which is absolutely fine. No big deal. Like, send it back. That's your deal. That's your deal and how you like your food. And I agree, you should get what you pay for. But I did ask the young lady, I said, what are you going to do with the steak? And she said, we're going to throw it away. And I was like, well, no, I'll take it. I'll gladly eat it. And one of my colleagues was like, absolutely not. You do not do that. Like, show a little bit more couth than that, Pollack. And I'm a barbarian, like we discussed. And I was like, so I reached out with my bare hand and I grabbed the steak and I bit into it. And I was like, that's a free steak. So I will absolutely eat that.
All right.
So there you go.
So were there like shocked executives at this table? Like,
probably. I'm probably surprised I still have a job, but that's okay. It was a really good steak and it didn't cost me a dime.
Do you remember what restaurant you were at? I'm the annoying reporter who asked for details.
Fleming's.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Different than like the red light, green light Brazilian place.
Yeah. Oh, Fogo de Chão. Doesn't get better than Fogo de Chão. Oh,
they do some damage there. I mean,
they have those in Kansas, huh?
We should ask right now while we're in this line of thinking where our barbecue should come from this weekend. I have not been to Kansas a time. I've been a handful of times. I haven't been enough to have refined barbecue opinions. I know, Reese, you've been there a lot for Game Day Hoops, so maybe you know. But
I've been there a ton, but I'm going to be honest with you. We haven't hit the great barbecue place. Now, what I'm told is there's a place in a gas station in Kansas City, more so than in Larrytown. That is the place to go, and I'm sure our listeners can give it to us.
Did a certain ESPN staff member say,
fathers and sons went to the gas station in Kansas City after the comma?
I'm not going to comment on that, but possibly. I don't know. I mean, oh, man. Off the rails. I love it. The best podcast ever. Get sideways early. So if you're tuning in to hear football, Pollock's got new internet to evaluate football. I am completely unperturbed. Informal usage for Mr. Wordsmith Pete, nonplussed perhaps by Georgia's struggles. I don't think he's a big deal. I think it's a simple case of sleepwalking and knowing they're better than the last couple of teams they've played, and it's just not a big deal. David Pollock, your thoughts?
Well, okay. Here's what I'll say about that. I might agree that they didn't. I don't think they've taken their last couple opponents like they should, but I also think there's something to be said about that. That means there's a lot of youth. Like, that means there's immaturity on the team. Like, when you look back at last year's team, I think one of the most important things, or one of the things we looked at the biggest, we were like, dude, these are a bunch of grown-ups. Jordan Davis, you know, all these guys, they're going to stay in Devontae Wyatt. They're going to stay in line. They're going to stay on task. They're going to stay focused. N'Kobe Dean, they're going to cover the small things that are very important to win. I think now you got a lot of youth. And what happens with youth? You wake up, some days you feel good, some days you don't. Some days you really want to play, and some days you don't. Some days you're really motivated. And so I don't think it speaks well for the maturity of the team. I think the offensive line got absolutely manhandled, which is a big problem. You need balance. You got to be able to run the football. I think there's an issue at left guard. I think, they got to find – they've got a bunch of running backs going. I think they need to find their best one or two maybe and stick with their best one or two. I thought Stetson played okay, but the defense gave up – I think the defense gave up like 200 yards on six plays, something like that. And the rest of the game, they gave up, a small number of yards per play. But I think it has something to do with focus for sure, Reese. But I also think – this says something about your maturity level, about your leadership, and you better get that stuff figured out down the road, because if you don't feel like playing all the time, you're going to get your hiney whipped.
So, as we've sort of crafted the narrative of Georgia attempting to replicate Alabama's consistent dominance, and they have a long way to go. I want to be clear about that.
But after that Oregon game, I among many people, were like, oh, okay, maybe they can just roll this out after, was it 17 draft picks, David? 17 NFL draft picks? 15?
Yeah, 16 or
it was 17. A record. Yeah, 16 or 17. It was a record. They had more players drafted than any team in the history of college football. So it's like, can you just roll this out again? And the thing that I've always found most fascinating about what Saban has done as Alabama is he's talked about fighting human nature. And I think we're seeing human nature creep into Georgia. You look at Bullard's arrest a couple weeks ago. You look at like the classic symptoms of success: disinterest in games, struggles in road games that you should dominate on paper, and just youth on the field, inconsistency that comes with it. So I really feel like that is one of the talent is there. I don't think there's a huge crisis of talent. There are some spots. There are some things that need to get better. But I really feel like human nature is Georgia's biggest enemy right now.
Man, Lou Holtz used to tell me all the time, you do not have the same football team from one week to the next. You get a different team every week. And that is especially true for guys that aren't, well, they are professionals in a way now, but they're not mature professionals. And, I'm not worried about it at all, because it almost helps, because you can now go back, not just to coaches. I'm not really, and we overestimate this. Boy, Kirby's going to really be mad and have stuff to use. Now, the players take some individual pride in performance, and they can look and say, that wasn't great that I got dominated in my one-on-one matchup. You know, if you're an offensive lineman at Georgia, if you didn't run the ball as effectively as you could, that's going to challenge your pride and performance. And, you know, the one thing that if history tells us anything with the game Georgia has coming up this weekend in the Deep South's oldest rivalry, which when they play will be the second most played rivalry in the sport, is that Auburn is likely to get a double-digit lead and blow it because they've done that in five consecutive SEC games. I'm not sure they're going to be able to get that on Saturday, David. What do you think?
You know, I thought Ashford played a heck of a ball game the other day. I thought that was the best he'd looked. You know, he was on point. I thought LSU kind of did a little bit of the Georgia, too. I thought they were pretty immature coming out and weren't as focused and locked in. I think they thought they were going to roll. I think they probably listened to game day and saw everybody say, hey, it's going to be a curb stomping and LSU's going to, you know, go flatten them. I think there was some of that. But Auburn is just, I don't know what Auburn is. I mean, it's a frustrating watch. It's like even play calling now when you go for it on fourth down, you know, at midfield with, you know, 3 or 4 minutes left in the ball game when I think you could punt or you could, you know, I decision making, you know, like I talked about on game day Saturday, Tank Bigsby not getting, you know, a bunch of carries every single game and riding him as much as you possibly can. So I don't have any faith in Auburn. But I think you'll see a better version of Georgia.
Yeah, maybe so, David. But he hasn't been able, whether it's offensive line issues or whatever, he hasn't done anything in their last three games. And I'm talking about yards per carry. Most of his production has come against Mercer and San Jose State. Now, is that because I assume, and from you watching the tape, you would know better than I, but I assume most of that is because nothing else Auburn has, or maybe Hunter too. Jarquez Hunter is a good running back. Nothing else Auburn has really scares you. So,
no. So
the better teams are going to say, okay, four's not beating me. If you're going to do something, nine, Robbie Ashford is going to do it. He's going to have to throw it or run it himself. I'm not letting Tank Bigsby beat me because he's the only guy that can. And as a result, in the SEC games in Penn State, he hasn't been able to do anything.
I think it's a couple reasons. One, your offensive line struggles. That's number one and most importantly. Now you couple that with quarterback play that's a struggle. I mean, obviously, there's not a lot of space for Tank Bigsby. Here's the thing. I get that, Reese, but he's still my best player. He's my best player. It is my job to find a way to manufacture
Fair
him
enough.
Touch it. No
Fair
matter
enough.
What that yeah. looks like, no matter what that is, whether I'm throwing him the ball to the backfield a little bit more, whether I'm putting him in the slot and running jet sweeps, whether I'm running speed options, that's my job. That's the offense's job to continue to find ways to get your by far heads in a way best player of the football as many times as you can.
My point was not that to not do it. My point was that it's not working that great. That's my point, is not to go away from Bigsby because the defense wants to stop it. My point is it's not really working, you know. So,
do we think this is it for Harsin if
they get run out of Athens?
Who knows, man? I mean, it's probably.
Pete, isn't that your job?
But who knows?
It is. It is. Yeah, but it's Auburn, know. Man. Predicting Auburn when you don't know who's in charge is always a little bit dangerous. I think there's a really good chance if the result is lopsided. I mean, they've become sort of a caricature of themselves at this point at Auburn because, like, it is a matter of when Brian Harsin gets fired, not if. So there was a window last week to do it, especially after the way the play calling went in the second half. They passed. The interesting part of the dynamics of firing Brian is that he's the play caller. And there's no obvious interim on staff.
Right.
So, like, you know, do you make Zach Etheridge the head coach, who's kind of one of your young, one of your own Auburn guys who I would say, you know, sometimes guys do this like USC, maybe to save the recruiting class or to keep recruiting momentum going. They have the worst recruiting class in the SEC.
They don't have any. Yeah.
So that doesn't seem to be a factor, but like you still have to coach six games at this point. That's a long time. There's some pretty high leverage, high leverage games left. That's not a place that just wants to wave the flag. And I don't know the staff well enough to know who would call plays. And they're all his guys too. Harsin doubled down on himself after the coup attempt last year. And I get it. Right. But you know, when the way the staff was redesigned, it was people he's comfortable with. So that dynamic's interesting too, because
you're, you know, there's only, you know, there's two or three kind of outsiders, but the rest of them are sort of his maybe a little more than two or three, but not many, but the rest of us is hardcore guys. So how does that dynamic play out?
One final thing on Auburn, Georgia. Georgia's won five in a row. It's the longest streak since Auburn won six in a row in the 50s. Historically, this is a back and forth series. This could be, to your point about dismissing Harsin, this could be very much like the Wisconsin-Illinois game. Maybe not to that level of vitriol, but because of the rivalry and the intensity, if they get embarrassed in that rivalry again, then that may be the time to move. David, I want to go to another game, but because you played in it, give me your best Auburn-Georgia story from when you played.
Dang.
Don't tell me about a swim move. I want something fun.
Something fun. I'm not very much fun.
But did you blow up Jason Campbell? You played against Campbell and Ronnie Brown.
Ronnie Brown, Cadillac. Yeah, they were.
That was a good team, man.
You know, this might not be the right time to tell this story, but it's a really good one. So I'll tell it to you. This is probably the wrong climate in the world with what's going on with head injuries and stuff. But we were down big to Auburn, and I got dinged really good on one play. And we needed to win. This was back in 2002, 2003 season. And we really needed to win. And we came out in the second half. Ronnie Brown had murdered us in the first half. And we came out in the second half and we started to stuff him. And I got a little bit dinged up. Well, back in the old school days, the trainer would come over and they'd give you a couple numbers to memorize. Like, hey, remember these numbers. And then they'd come back to you like a couple minutes later. And I can just tell you from where I was at, I had no shot. Okay, I had no shot to remember the numbers. So I grabbed one of my teammates and I'm like, bro, listen, go write down these numbers. 34, 24, 17. I remember the numbers now. 34, 24, 17. I was like, dude, go write it on your hand. And when he comes up to ask me those numbers, you hold that flipping hand up so I can see it and so I can be perfectly fine. And he did, but that was the game and the finish with that would end up being Michael Johnson, 4th and 16, remember? And yeah. Or 4th and 12, him catching that touchdown and going absolutely ballistic. And the first time we won an SEC championship in 20 or 30 years, but we had got donkey stomped the first half, our defense, and we were a really good defense and then came out in the second half and played really, really well. So that's probably my best story that I shouldn't tell in light of what's going on with the world of concussions.
That game
is that as good environment, too, right? David? That you played in. I love that environment at Auburn. Is that
you played awesome. In all the
yeah.
It's so great. It's Jordan Hare, you know, it's a great atmosphere, you know, the Eagle, the introduction. I mean, the fans are I honestly feel at this point in my career, I feel bad for the fans because the fans are better than the team and the program in which they run and stuff. I mean, they stick by their team, they're always there, they showed up, they show out. Like, it's such a great we've been to them all, Reese, like it's one of the best ones in all of college football. I mean, they just love their team. That's why you hate all the dysfunction and the losing that they got going on now, because it shouldn't happen.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. The fans, I was on Feinbaum yesterday and sort of, you know, the rank and file fans, I don't mean that dismissively. I just mean the average people, you know, who do their jobs, have their families every day and love Auburn football. They're great and they're loyal and they stick and they deserve better. They deserve to have the program run better than it's been in recent years. Before we move on, there's one quick thing I want to mention. Check out our friend Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. Every Thursday throughout college football season, Steve and Bear dig into the college football slate and deliver their best bets for the weekend ahead. That's Stanford Steve and the Bear. Follow the show wherever you're listening to this podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Best in Game, brought to you by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises. David, from your film study, what changes? Because did you guys notice? Now, I didn't watch every piece of it. I saw a clip. Alabama sent out practice video of their wide receivers catching passes, but we don't know who was throwing the passes. Ah, so now the odds makers are saying that Alabama's a 24-point favorite against Texas A&M. That would indicate that perhaps Bryce Young will play, but maybe not. If he doesn't, when Jalen Milroe gets the start and goes, what changes? What's the biggest change for Alabama? Other than the fact that the dude runs like, you know, Mike Vick or somebody.
Well, just think Jalen Hurts versus Tua Tagovailoa. That to me is a good comparison, because the offense becomes now predicated on his ability to run zone read. Think about the biggest plays in the ball game from when he took over. He goes 77 on a scramble that was awesome. I mean, gets to the middle of the field, breaks some ankles, goes. You think about when they got backed up in the red area a couple times. What happened? I don't think this happens with Bryce Young. They run a screen to Gibbs. He takes it down to the two, a holding penalty. It comes back. They throw a screen to JoJo, and he scores. So I think it becomes a more run-heavy offense. I don't think it's a surprise either. You know, Jabari Gibbs had a 270-plus-yard runs with Milroe as a quarterback. I think it makes the offensive line a little bit better, because now the backside has to really play the run. Is the passing game better? Heck no. I'm not stupid. Okay, the passing game takes a big hit in what they're able to accomplish, but the running game becomes a lot more dangerous. You know, they can do the time of possession thing. They can the 24 with Milroe. Now listen, you're playing A&M, and they struggle to get forward passes completed in first downs, which is really hard. You know, that's not really good for your team. But I don't think Alabama's as explosive as an offense, especially through the air. But it's very different in how you defend it, and I think the running game would accelerate big time with Milroe.
So I'm gonna throw a little quarterback wrinkle in, just to be a bit of a contrarian here. 2 years from now, Ty Simpson and Connor Wigman are going to be the faces of college football. So Ty Simpson is the third string quarterback at Alabama. His father is the coach at UT Martin. Connor Wigman is a good enough recruit that when Quinn Ewers went in the portal from Ohio State, Texas A&M was like, we're good. We're good. We got our guy. So in terms of pure quarterback talent, Connor Wigman is the best quarterback at Texas A&M. Apologies to the Max Johnson bandwagon on the crisp internet Zoom on my screen in front of me. And Ty Simpson certainly is not better than Bryce Young, but is probably the face of Alabama future, just in terms of long term. He's as highly regarded a quarterback recruit as Nick Saban has got there. So just if that game gets weird on Saturday, which when you're dealing with, you know, You have two unknowns starting, you know, potentially starting a quarterback, right? So just those are interesting names for now, for the future, but maybe for a cameo on Saturday. If Jalen Milroe, if they need to throw the ball, and that is not what Jalen Milroe is best at in terms of downfield passing. Now, he's obviously anyone who flipped on the Arkansas game can see his skill set, and it's a high-end skill set. But it would be interesting to see if all of a sudden those guys get in the mix. I know at Texas A&M, they really feel like Wigman's the best quarterback in that room. And now, do you roll him out for his first career start in Tuscaloosa? Probably not. That would be foolish. But I do think that if that offense continues to be the biggest slog and the biggest disappointment in the sport, Jimbo needs to be in the business of hope, because there is not much hope right now for that A&M offense, and I think Wigman represents it.
Okay, but I don't know how to say this without, you know, and listen, Jimbo makes $90 million. Okay. Jimbo makes $90 million, so I guess I don't need to be sensitive to Jimbo's feelings, for goodness sakes. But Jimbo's got to do some reevaluation on what he wants to be offensively. I mean, I don't think there's a quarterback in the country that's going to be very successful with the pieces they have on offense, lack of a deep threat, Anaya Smith out. You got one of the best running backs in the country in HN. That dude is an animal. Your offensive line is kind of figuring itself out. But again, play calling, what you are, what your identity is. And again, I think Jimbo has done a great job in his life when he has certain pieces. When he has certain pieces, I think Jimbo's a phenomenal offensive coach. I want to see Jimbo Fisher do this and mold to his pieces. Whatever he has, he needs to find a way to make it successful. That's his job. And I think, you know, if you put Wigman in the game, he's going to have the same result as Max Johnson. He's going to have the same result as Haynes King. He's going to struggle his flipping tail off, especially against a team like Alabama. So I don't know that you help him and you give any future hope against Alabama this week. Now, maybe down the road if the schedule lightens up like crazy, but there's not a lot of that going on. I think A&M's looking for wins at some point, hopes, the recruiting class now, all that momentum that Jimbo had in the offseason and last year is tanking the other direction. You need to find a way to create more momentum, because here's the thing. What has everybody done for years against Kirby Smart? Well, they're not going to throw it. Well, you don't want to be a weapon to go there. What is everybody going to do to A&M right now? Like, look at that offense. You want to go play that offense? Look at that offense the past couple years. That's what you want to hitch your wagon to? Like, I know you're going to get money and you're going to get NIL deals, but is that what you're going to go to the NFL and that? Like, I'm just telling you what recruiting will look like and what people will be saying behind closed doors.
And how about this? Jimbo has to give up play calling. Do you think that, like, to evolve, as David says, do you think they need an offense coordinator who calls plays and he needs to just accept his de-geniusing?
Either that or, Pete, you and I have talked about this a couple of times, and I'm going to bring it up again because I thought it was a really insightful point. And I'm going to go ahead and take away what Pollock is going to zing me with immediately. Clearly, it's not working yet for David Shaw, but it's a smart way to think about things. He was talking about how much of my institutional knowledge of what Stanford should look like is still valuable. You know, so he's made some changes, haven't worked yet, for sure. But the philosophy of evaluating that is smart. And that's what Jimbo has to do, in my judgment. If he is not willing to do that, then yes, he probably does need to change and give up play calling. But if he is willing to say, how much of my institutional knowledge of what a Jimbo Fisher offense, what the quarterbacks are supposed to look like, what the tempo should be in this era of college football, what type of quarterback I should have, you know, those types of things, if he's willing to look at that and sort of overhaul his belief system, keep what works for sure, because he hasn't just suddenly forgotten how to develop a quarterback or orchestrate an offense. It's not like he doesn't know how to do it in the modern era. He just needs to figure out what's holding him back. What's keeping him from evolving and taking the next step and being explosive the way they used to be when, you know, in his LSU offenses and his Florida State offenses. And I know the cynics are going to say, well, he had Jameis or he had EJ Manuel, but still, I mean, I think he needs to look at that. And if he's willing to reevaluate that institutional knowledge, great. If he's not, he probably needs to give up the reins because this is not, it's not good enough. When you consider this, and I'm a little higher on Milroe as a passer eventually. He's a thrower now, but he's going to polish. He's already improved. But consider this. Jalen Milroe comes into the game. Granted, Arkansas has some defensive problems. They put 35 on the board with Milroe at quarterback. A&M hasn't scored that many points all year. They haven't top 31, I don't think. Certainly haven't against an FBS opponent. So I think there's some reevaluation.
We need to circle back real quick to the first point because you said I'm going to kill you. Did you just use a 1-3 Stanford team as your analogy?
See, for how well do I know this guy?
Get better? Hey, guys, A&M fans, I just want you to focus on David Shaw's reinventing himself as a 1-3.
He didn't say reinventing himself.
You could do that if you work really hard.
He said evaluating institutional knowledge because sometimes you get so – we see it in every walk of life. You see it in your personal walk. What you decide, you look and say, okay, how do I need to evolve and change? And am I willing to do that? If you sit on your bed in the morning, I heard a wise man say, what are the stupid things that I'm doing to hold my life back that I could change right now? And the man I heard say this, wise dude, said, you better be ready for the answer, man, if you really want it. You know, you better be ready for the answer. And not many people have the capacity to do that. And all I'm saying is that Shaw has at least shown that.
But it's still been. The only thing
that's been on the airwaves more than me reciting how many weeks it's been since Stanford has beaten an FBS opponent is the ads about how toxic the water is at Camp Lejeune. But other than that, I say it every week, and here they have another chance. But okay,
let's put a bow on this. With
I shouted you down, David. I'm sorry, because I know you so well. I knew where you were going.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do some fun, baseless speculation of who A&M could hire as a coordinator. And this is I'm gonna
just go off the top of my head, off of like partially just due to eyeball bias from game day this year. Could they hire Kevin Barbet from App State, who won in their stadium with a great game plan and has shown some diversity? Could they hire Andy Kotelnicki from Kansas, who has little old Kansas barnstorming through the Big 12? Could they do they go full heel and go Zach Kittley from Texas Tech?
That's who I was going to say.
And go 10,000 miles an hour. I mean, you know, maybe Kendall Briles, he fits in that realm too. Do you puncture your West rival who should have beat you this year and take away a prize? I don't know. With a new hire comes a new identity and an embrace that you're going to be different. So, and those three are all pretty different in how they, in how they operate. But it will be very interesting to see if Jimbo does take that step, how he chooses to evolve.
How about your guy, Alex Golish at Tennessee?
Yeah, he'd be great.
I mean, shoot, he's got them rolling. I would think if they kind of run through this thing and, you know, are in contention in the East and play Georgia and Bama tough, I would think he starts getting mentioned for like MAC jobs and AAC jobs. There's one thing about hiring guys from that type of tree. And it's like, it was like Tennessee's hire of Heupel, which I really liked. It was like, you know exactly what you're getting. You got somebody to coach the quarterback. You know what your offense is going to look like. And at the end of the day, it may take you a while to win big, but you're going to score and fans are going to like it. Like there's something to be said for, it was like what Sean Lewis did at Kent State. They said, we are going to be fast and this is our identity and we're going to grow into that, recruit to it. It's distinct. So, you know, those are all, interesting.
It just makes me chuckle that y'all picked air raid offense, like with Jimbo, like just to think about Jimbo's head and the way it would explode, because he's always been like, it's a progression guy. You know, you go through your progressions and it's like, no. Catch, spin. And then you talk about Kansas. You talk about basically a spread option running attack, like just un-Jimbo Fisher. I would love to see. But here's the thing. I know that they need more voices on their coaching staff that have a say on the offense that are good offensive minds. They need more of that if they want to be successful.
And David, I think you bring up a great point, because all of this sounds good in fantasy football. Your coordinators had better be aligned with what the head coach believes, because if it's not, and he starts tinkering with things, it can invite disaster. I remember a story, the great Gene Stallings, when he was at Alabama and they needed him to open up the offense, he hires Homer Smith. And he's going through Homer's playbook and he's like, I like this play, but we're not running that one. And Homer's trying to tell him, but coach, we got to run the play you don't like, you play you don't like in order for the one that you do like to work better. So that's the type of thing you can run into if you hire a guy that you don't really believe in, if you're sort of urged. I don't know if anybody can force Jimbo to do anything, but urged, he acquiesces and hires someone out of that tree. He better be all in, or else he better just evaluate himself and how he can get better at what he does. You guys know that this is the first time ever that Kansas and Kansas State are ranked. Texas and Oklahoma aren't. So we're going to Kansas. Can't wait to get there. It's going to be a blast. We had no business going there for the Duke game, but now they've earned it. And they're the story right now. TCU is a pretty good story too. Pollock, does it come to an end? Does the clock strike midnight for Rock Chalk on Saturday afternoon against the Frogs?
Yeah, I think so. Unfortunately, I hate to be the bearer, I think, of bad news. I love Kansas. I love what they've done. I think Daniel should be right now. If you're talking about Heisman, like in the Heisman discussion, and you take off all the uniforms and you watch who's been playing, like I think I would have a couple of guys that probably most people don't have as their front runners, you know, slash guys I would put at the top of the Heisman ballot right now. And he's one of them. I mean, he's been dynamic. He's been electric. And by the way, the whole offense is run through him. Like it's about his mobility. It's about his decision making. It's about what he can do. But and you watch Kansas as well as their coach. But I just think TCU's explosiveness is stupid. I mean, I think they've got – I mean, they can do so much offensively. They have so many weapons. They got a quarterback in Duggan who – he's not a – he's not Daniels with the way he runs, but he runs it well enough and physical enough to even – to keep it even more dynamic. They can run the football. They can throw it. I think they have more balance, which is you know, Kansas isn't going to drop back and throw the football, you know, 30 times and you're not going to feel great about it. But TCU, man, they're set up for success. I think they're a team that has staying power. And if you're asking me who's going to win the Big 12 right now, I would definitely roll with what I've seen with TCU so far.
And Pete's guy hasn't even played much yet. Quentin Johnson, no. Right?
Johnson. Yeah. He had 4 catches against Oklahoma, and none of them were particularly impactful. It was funny. I was watching the Dylan Gabriel clip this morning to see if TCU's linebacker, I forgot if it was in the second quarter or the third quarter. So I was just kind of Googling it and looking around, and it was with 9 minutes left in the second quarter when they already had 34 points. like as much as I was looking at the clip, I was like, they had 34 points with 9 minutes to go in the second quarter. I mean, that's insane. So look, like, I think we kind of called on the podcast last week, Reese, TCU as the biggest mystery in college football. And they certainly revealed themselves as a high-end Big 12 contender. I think an authoritative performance in Lawrence, which I have confidence that they're going to be able to deliver because they just have an element of team speed that I don't think Kansas has seen yet. And I think they will eventually struggle with. I think they can really, you know, put themselves right with Oklahoma State. In Oklahoma State's been interesting too, because they've flown under the radar. Like, one of those teams is going to be in the thicket of that playoff discussion now. And I think it's in that Big 12 right now. And I think it's one of those two, right? I don't
Oklahoma
really
State, listen, Oklahoma State and TCU, that, like, especially Oklahoma State too, they deserve to fly under the radar. When you play what you play to start the season,
sure.
That's like, you, how am I supposed to honestly rate you? But listen, I picked Oklahoma State this week because I like what I saw from Spencer Sanders in the first 4 games. I had no clue if it was going to translate. Like, yeah. I just didn't know because they're playing such bad competition. But you watch Oklahoma State versus Baylor, and I love what I see from the – he is not a guy that's going to go through progressions and not going to pick you apart from the pocket. I don't have to ask him to do that. Spencer Sanders is going to be a read the field, take off, and run. They're going to use his athletic ability like crazy to get him out in space and to run the football and to stay manageable situations. And they created some big plays. They had a big kickoff return, obviously, too, that I think really, really helped. But defensively, I think they played good, too. But I think we had reason to say that about teams. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people having doubts about teams until they play somebody.
Yeah, and you give Oklahoma State and TCU maybe a little bit of a pass. Like, when you schedule Colorado and Arizona State 5 years ago or whatever it is, you know what I mean? There's always a joke in our game day offices of Wyoming and, you know, Maryland have agreed to a home and home in 2039, 2042. Like, that's just sort of the way the system works. So Michigan, you're like, okay, you just bailed on UCLA. Like, you've sort of earned any early season skepticism from your cupcakes. At least Oklahoma State had that home and home with Arizona State, and obviously TCU played Colorado. You know, on paper, that first Friday night, you're like, oh, okay. Like, they're – and I believe they went to Boulder, too. You're like, okay.
It was a decent game for a long while, too, by the way.
Yeah. No, it was. So at least, like, I always honor intent, and sometimes if a team just ends up – you know, like, I remember 1 year Ohio State played Cal. They scheduled it, like, during the, you know, Aaron Rodgers days when Cal was, like, a good West Coast team, and they stunk at – you know, by the time the game played. So that's always like an interesting philosophical thing. But I think we get another key piece of information about TCU at Kansas this week. How do they handle it? It'll be a hostile road environment. And I know if I had said Kansas and hostile road environment on an August podcast, you guys would have laughed me right off the thing. But like, they're going to be generationally juiced there for that game. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond.
You're not really going to find out about a Sonny Dykes coach team until November, because they do this a lot. 7-0 to start last year, lost 4 of 5. Year before that, start 5-0, lost 3 of 5. Year before that, started 7-0, lost 3 of 5. In his first year at SMU, also lost 3 of 5 down the stretch. But they started poorly that year in his first year. So I'm still skeptical about their ability to finish because of his track record, and it's his first year. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm just saying that there are, I don't know if it gets to the point where people get a little more comfortable playing them, figure him out a little bit, slow it down, or if there's something else in the water there. But it's not a one-time thing. They have struggled down the stretch of seasons when he's been the head coach. And so we'll see. They're off to a great start. They're dynamic and fun to watch. And like you said, put 500 yards on Oklahoma in the first half. It was impressive, man. I'm slowing my roll on picking TCU to win the Big 12 or to play in the Big 12 championship game, at least for now. I probably lean Oklahoma State, and you know, Baylor's taking a hit for sure. But you know, Oklahoma State might be the most well-rounded
team. You like Kansas State, Reese, early.
I do like Kansas. I did like Kansas State.
Write them off.
I was rattled by. Now, maybe I shouldn't have been because I watched Tulane again the other night. I was rattled by the Tulane game. I didn't see it coming, the Kansas State loss, and I was like, man, I don't know. But, you know, maybe so. And Kansas State's going to have to follow up too. Yeah. So,
can I ask David one question about TCU?
Wheel of Destiny. David, need a big 12 Wheel of Destiny. Just spin that thing.
David, in watching TCU's defense, I'm curious what you thought. They brought Gillespie in from Tulsa. It's a little bit of like a 3-3-5, kind of a funky, odd deal. It's a little different maybe than what Sonny's done at other stops. And they had a lot of success at Tulsa. They actually changed their identity around their defense. What have you thought of their defense so far and how they've looked? I don't have a sense of like the dudes they have on that side of the ball.
Well, it's interesting because Gary Patterson had that side for so long, but they had really started to slip on that side big time. And I would say personnel-wise, they're not even close to what I'm used to seeing from them. Like, I mean, you used to see first-round picks in the secondary pretty consistently. You used to see D linemen up front that you could dominate. But I don't know because, again, Colorado's not my test. Like, Oklahoma's offense, like Dylan Gabriel, if he played the whole game, would have been really fun to see too, by the way, because once 11 came in, it was over. I mean, that game was done. So I think it's – I know the offense is going to be ridiculous and be great. I think the defense, I got to wait and see when they play teams that are a little bit better. But they're definitely different. They're definitely unique. And but I still – the jury's way out on them.
Are we going to have a General Booty sighting at the State Fair?
Boy, I hope so. Well, yes. So. But if you're talking about the Oklahoma quarterback – there remains to be seen.
Boo.
He's how can you ask that question and then boo that response? It was too easy.
I think Pat McAfee is going to be really excited about General Booty. That's my game day prediction for Saturday. Yeah,
that's going to be your lock of the week.
Yes.
For sure.
Our listeners should know, who aren't way in the weeds, that he is the nephew, I believe, of the famous Booty family. Is that right? David Booty and Josh Booty. So. I believe Josh he's Booty, a nephew. Yeah. I believe he's a nephew of the Booties of the Boot in Louisiana.
Booties of the Boot, the quarterbacking Booties of the Boot.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of Booties.
A lot of Booties.
For sure. All right. There's some teams, David. I'm going to give you a list of teams that really have sort of pivotal season games coming up this weekend. It's going to really set the direction for what they're going to be the rest of the year. Arkansas, after the oink doink and then, you know, the failed comeback against Alabama, Mississippi State. North Carolina, Miami, you could probably say that for both teams, but especially Miami. And BYU at Notre Dame. What's the most pivotal season swinging game in that group?
I think it's Notre Dame. I think Morgan Freeman had so much juice and so much energy and so much love. Like,
did you say Morgan
David,
Freeman?
Do that again, David. It's Marcus Freeman.
I said Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman.
Just pick it.
He'd do a great pregame speech, Morgan Freeman.
I gotta do
I'd want to run down on special teams.
I got to do my best Morgan Freeman voice now, don't I? What's his name again? Marcus Freeman, yeah.
Just pick Marcus it up Freeman, again.
I think he had so much juice and just so much energy. I think they need to continue to win. I really do. I think they need to continue to be competitive, continue to put a good product on the field. I just think for the Irish – They're playing a good team. BYU is not explosive. They're not a team that's going to put the fear of God in you, but they're a highly ranked team. You got a great opportunity to say, hey, look, we started off struggling. We rebounded. We beat North Carolina. Watch this team. Watch us grow. This is what we're going to be in the future. So for the long haul, I think it's big for Notre Dame.
It's an interesting game to use fear of God in. I think that BYU and Notre Dame have a lot in common because they are not explosive, and they are going – this is going to be a low-scoring grinder that I think is going to come down to the last possession. I think it'll actually be a very good game, and it's going to be a very good test of where Marcus Freeman's Notre Dame team is in terms of toughness, in terms of running the ball, in terms of the offense embracing its identity, which is one of not exploding. And I'm excited for that game on Saturday night. I think it's going to be a really interesting, hard-hitting game. Notre Dame's young tackles really struggled early. I sort of assumed that they would emerge as dominant forces, and they haven't. And now you got a couple 19-year-olds in Alton Fisher going up against men, right? That's what you have at BYU. So it's going to be really interesting in Sin City to see how that unfolds late.
I'm really interested to see North Carolina and Miami, who had that when these two teams played in the preseason, that the best quarterback in the ACC would be playing, but he would be playing for North Carolina and not for Miami.
Yeah, and the one struggling for his job would be playing for Miami.
Yeah, Tyler Van Dyke. They're going to start with him, and then I'm talking about Drake May, who's,
of course,
for all of the problems with North Carolina's defense, Drake May's made up for a bunch of them when the Tar Heels have the ball.
And we thought, I heard a lot of people automatically, like right away, Miami's going to be back. Like, what did Cristobal do in Oregon that really just made you go, man, that's the guy that's going to turn this around really quickly? He recruited well. He absolutely recruited well. But I think there's things to be desired about how they game plan. I think there's things to be desired about how they coached things. Like, I think there's, I don't know. I want to see Miami. I think he's got a lot of, he's trying to create momentum. He's trying to create juice for him, but I don't know, man. He's got a lot to prove to me about this being a home run hire, this being the Miami's back, the U's excited, stuff like that. I think there's a lot they're going to have to prove to me first.
The one thing I mentioned, Sonny Dykes, too, and look, these coaches make a lot of money, so we get to critique them. Something that was on brand for Cristobal is a face plant when you don't expect it. And they've already delivered that early with the loss to Middle Tennessee. But
how about the Middle Tennessee State coach, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you gave us $1.5 million and averaged 1.6 yards a carry.
Rick Stock still has been around a long time. He can say
good
that stuff.
You, Rick. I love it.
I do extend some grace to Miami because, look, it's the first year. And same for Sonny. It's the first year, and so things happen. People buy in, they don't buy in. Guys are portaling in, they're portaling out. It's it's a difficult thing and rare. I'm still waiting to see. USC had a little bit of adversity at Oregon State, or a lot within the game. I'm waiting to see what happens, when and if they lose a game. When and if they have a game where, maybe, the receivers don't get the touches they want, or maybe there's a receiver other than Addison that wants more touches. He's not getting them. All of those things, still waiting to see. First year takes a little while. So I don't know. I guess I'm just a skeptic that way sometimes. So, but I am extending some grace on the Cristobal face plant because, they got caught with their pants down. It happens. People lose games sometimes.
Well, did they lose the game things, or did they get dominated?
They got dominated.
I'm about to say, there's a difference between losing a game and getting punched in the face by Mississippi State. I'm just going to say that. There's a difference.
Middle Tennessee. So it's an interesting thought on grace, Reese. You certainly are a gracious guy. You would extend grace.
The situation that set up Mario Cristobal coming from Oregon to Miami was completely graceless. What they did to Manny Diaz, how they hung him to dry, how they whacked him out. It was cold-blooded business. So, and look, they got the hire they wanted, and this is a $1 billion business, so I'm not going to go old-timey on you and all that stuff. But I'm going to say this. When you enter Miami on those circumstances, you are susceptible to those same whims and circumstances, right?
That's true.
And if you come for big money – now, I'm not saying Mario Cristobal's in trouble. I'm not intimating that. But if I'm Josh Gattis right now, I'm nervous.
right? Because those same people who are paying and who paid massive buyouts and moved mountains to get me and are, you know, there's a huge cash influx in Miami. Miami is not a patient place. Like, they are just not going to say, hey, that looked great, Mario. Run it back exactly the same. And is the failure this season to see some development from Tyler Van Dyke, is that Tyler Van Dyke's fault or is that the coaching staff's fault? Well, I know what the Miami crowd is going to think. Like, look, he's a talented dude, and I've had a lot of NFL people tell me that. So all I'm saying is when you enter through such a period of volatility, you are exposing yourself to that volatility going forward. You are not hermetically sealed from the same whims and spasms that brought you there. So
hermetically sealed. Okay.
Yeah. The second point is, this is what I want to know from Miami. What are you? Like, what are you going to look like, and what is your identity on offense? Mario Cristobal went after Kendall Briles, who was, you know, who obviously runs like a hyper-tempo offense, you know, the Baylor offense as it's known. He also went after Josh Gattis, who basically ran Wisconsin's offense or Stanford's offense via Matt Weiss, who came in. And I don't, if you say right now, what is the Miami offense? There's not an answer. And I don't think there was a vision set on what the offense was going to be at Miami. And I think that's going to end up being a problem going forward, because if you don't know what you are and you can't recruit to what you are, that's going to be an issue. So I will be curious. Like, look, they play North Carolina. We know exactly what we're going to see from North Carolina, right? Like, it is a clear and distinct identity that Phil Longo has brought there. Maybe too clear and distinct for some folks sometimes, because they, you know, sometimes the offense takes away from the defense. But there is an identity and a vision, and I've yet to see that at Miami.
One other game that I think is really important for momentum of a program is Arkansas. Arkansas is on the road at Mississippi State. Then they go to BYU. They've got a trip to Auburn, whatever you think of that. They have Ole Miss later. If they lose to Mississippi State and then a trip to BYU coming, that's four losses, and you know, an Ole Miss too coming in. I mean, you're looking at the possibility of really taking a step back. So I think it's a really, really big game for Arkansas on Saturday. Yeah.
And I think they did what they needed to do this offseason. I thought they won the offseason by keeping Briles and keeping Odom. Like, I think that I thought that was a really, really big deal. But I mean, their pass defense has been a nightmare. Offensively, they're very one dimensional. They don't throw the football well, and it's whether it's the receivers or the quarterback, you pick what you want. Treylon Burks was there; he could do it a lot better, and Burks made more plays. But you know, you're going to ask KJ Jefferson to carry the load a whole season with those names of the schedule that you just talked about physically to hold up. You're asking him to do a lot. That defense better grow up and better grow up fast.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about Oklahoma, Texas. Before we get out of here, David, what else are you doing? What else are you doing besides grinding over college football film?
Still coaching football.
How are we doing? How are we doing?
I saw
Nicholas make some big time hits on your phone the other day. That's an impressive thing.
He got lucky. No, he fell a couple hits. We are 5-0. We are number two in the state right now with North Oconee Titans. We are doing well. We dropped a 70 burger last week, but that was last week, and that means absolutely nothing. But just doing a little bit of that. Just finished up some flag football with baby girl with Leah, and now we're all college football. Hey, the last thing I do want to say though is I'm jacked about UCLA Utah. I think that would be awesome this weekend. I think that would be really fun to watch, but like, Chip has got some fun pieces, and that Jake Bobo kid is an absolute stud. He is a problem. Like, I can't believe we didn't know more about him in the past.
Pride of Massachusetts, David. Speak for yourself. Yeah. Right at the state of Massachusetts by a Duke.
And Duke. I love Duke.
I know, but I'm just saying, don't act like he was like a prized recruit that everybody got and went, oh my God, we got Jake Bobo. So
I mean, Massachusetts just churns out skill guys. All right. We churn out skill guys here. It's an assembly line. It's a Kangol line.
Yeah, all those Kangols up north and those are just beautiful. Dude, great job.
It's like Dade County North, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
And that's really interesting that you're excited about that, because I'm sure that the old Rose Bowl is going to be a buzz with excitement with tens of people in the stands to watch.
Golly, between Troy Aikman, you, and Kirk, good Lord, that poor UCLA fan base. Good gosh.
What fan base? Actually, I contacted both of UCLA's ardent fans and asked them to come on the podcast, and both said they had an appointment with a SUP board operator or something. So
I'm excited for Chip. Chip's so fun to watch call plays, and he's done it for long enough. And I think he's got a sneaky good team when you look at like what they have in the tight end room in DTR. Like, they are designed a little bit like an NFL team, and they're built not to lose. That's how Chip kind of operates. This is not Oregon Chip. This is not crazy Chip. But that'll be a fascinating chess match with Utah. I expect another sort of low scoring game from there, and we're obviously going to have our eye on the Utes, because I think they're on our bigger picture slate for potential destinations for the following Saturday, because with the Trojans coming to town. So no, that's going to be a heck of a nightcap. And look, LA is an event town, right? Like, you need an event to get people to show up. It will be an interesting litmus test whether Utah is an event.
I don't see a lot of optimism
from our pod brothers.
But you know what else? I mean, I may be wrong. I think that is just fine with Chip. Let him call the plays. Let Pete Thamel talk about him on a podcast, and that way you don't have to put up with a lot of the other stuff that he doesn't always find as appealing. Although, you know, the funny thing about it is he came on game day when we were there last year, and he's fantastic. But that doesn't mean he always loves doing all the media stuff and all the hype and the attention. So he probably
does. I hate you, media people.
You're one of them. This is the thing. This is a great thing, is all these former players like to act like they're not in the media, but they are. You're a media guy now, Polly. More people of the demographic that you crave. You always say young. Those people know you as a game day guy. He's a guy on game day. Hey, did he play?
I'm definitely not a football player. These guys weren't alive when I played football.
Yeah. He was probably an H-back, maybe. I don't know.
Three technique, baby. Put the hand in the dirt, baby. Let's go.
All right. Gentlemen, going to be fun in Larrytown. Pete's already gotten word from a scout about the place to go get ribs, about a 30-minute drive. Maybe we'll check that out. So,
David, fun with that. Y'all kill it.
I'm so pleased with your internet. Congratulations on coming into the high-speed world, the up-tempo offense of communication, as it were.
Yeah, well, you know, the good thing was it got me out of a lot of work a lot of times. I didn't have to worry, your internet sucks, we can't get you on. I don't have that excuse anymore.
That's going to do it for this edition of the College Game Day podcast. We will be back on Friday to make picks and tell you how to go exactly opposite of us and make tens of thousands of dollars, I'm sure. Pete and David, I'm Reese. Download the podcast wherever it is that you like to get your podcast. We'll see you on Friday.